Okay, so this is Bio 231. A little loud. We want to just keep it in this room probably, not the whole campus. There we go. It's a little bit better. Let's see if I can get rid of that hum. That's not bad. Okay, and it is January 31st. And does anybody need a syllabus? No? Y'all got a syllabus. Okay, when's the first test? Okay, first test, February 9th, that's a Wednesday, so it's a week and a half from today. Okay, week and a half, so today, tissues. We started tissues a little bit, but we'll proceed with tissues some more today. So on February 9th, it's going to be chapters 1, 2, 4, and 5. So introduction, cells, tissues, and then integument, which is 5. So we just got to cover integument system, okay. Well, that's still looking good. All right. And don't forget, when do you have an online quiz? Tuesday, tomorrow at 11. All right. So make sure everybody is on time. I've got welcome letters and syllabus if you need it. And I think I also have a sign-in sheet that I forgot to pass around last time. Let's make sure we don't pass it around today. Always remind me because I want to give you guys credit that you're in class. So let's just start right here. And that's as of the first day. So if you're registered with an ad code, you're still not on the list. Probably maybe starting next week, I'll update it to a little bit more current version. Even though probably I won't be able to add anybody at the noon lab today. Okay, so we're talking about tissues. What the heck is a tissue? How would you describe a tissue? Yes, we're talking about cells, so it's going to be a group of cells. That's a group of cells, so the building block of a tissue will be cells, and all those cells in a tissue will look the same, which means then that they're going to function the same, and the space between the cells will look identical as well, which means all the spaces within a tissue will be performing the same kind of function. And what's the nice thing about tissues? Is it complicated or not too complicated? Because how many general classes are there? There's only four. That means that it's not very complicated. You could point to some part of your body and I can tell you exactly what kind of tissue it is. And you've got to know these four tissues: epithelium, connective tissue, muscle, and nervous tissue. And we started talking about epithelium. Okay, I did say something about a membrane. A membrane some people think and talk about as being a tissue, but really it's an epithelium with some connective tissue put together. And What do we call that structure that we take two different kinds of tissue to put them together to perform a certain kind of function? What's that? That's an organ. Yeah, so make sure you can go up and down that hierarchical organization of different kinds of structures, how we put them together. Okay, so an epithelium, characteristics. The cells are very close together. There's very little extracellular material. There's almost none, right? So the cells are very close together. Epithelium either covers a surface or lines a cavity. Epithelium also forms glands. So if you look at a gland, you're going to see that it really looks like epithelium. And a good way to view an epithelium is that you find the apical surface. So you look for some place that doesn't have any cells or any kind of substance whatsoever. That's the free space or free edge that then you bump into the epithelium. That epithelium we call the apical surface. And then if you go all the way through the epithelium, you get to the basal surface. So epithelia are polar. The apical surface usually is a lot different than the basal surface. And the strange thing is that epithelium never contain blood vessels. It's avascular, which means then that all epithelia, even if it's stratified, is still a thin layer. All right, so how do we classify epithelium that we see on the slide on the right? First, we classify by the number of layers that it has and then by the cell shape. Number of layers, there's only two kinds of layers, two types of layers. If there's one layer, we say simple. If it's more than one, we say stratified. So if it's 2, 3, 4, or up to 50 or more layers, it's still a stratified epithelium. And then we look at the shape of the cells and the apical part of that epithelium, and we determine what the shape of that cell is. That determines how we classify it, either as being a squamous or flat, cuboidal, if all dimensions of the cell pretty much are equal, or columnar, if the cell is a lot taller, then it is wide or deep. Okay, so that's the classification system. Pretty easy to do so far. Okay, there's a couple strange kinds of epithelia. Let's see if we can find these strange ones in here. This right here, well, let's talk about this one. Some of you have spent some time in lab and looked at lung, and lung is filled with these big hollow spaces that we call alveoli, and it's maybe hard to see what kind of epithelium this is. All right, but here is one cell that goes from here to about here, and it is flat. And how many layers do you see? Just one. So that's just a simple squamous epithelium. So we've taken something like that's a skin on a grape and taken out the inside part of the grape, and we just have the skin of the grape, and let's just say that that's just one cell layer thick, and it just forms this like spherical structure that's just one cell layer thick. And that's just a simple squamous epithelium. All right, the next kind of epithelium that we're looking at here. When we start to look at epithelium, if you've had lab, I've always mentioned this, start by trying to find one of two objects. Either some free space that doesn't contain anything. Here is a tube, all right, and here is the center of the tube that's going to be carrying maybe blood, if it's a blood vessel, all right, or maybe in this particular case, this is a kidney tubule that's going to be carrying urine, but there's really nothing inside the center of this tube except for whatever product is flowing through the tube. We call that the lumen of the tube. So find this free edge of the epithelium. All right, so here's the free space with nothing in it. And then find the basement membrane, which is this nice dark structure right here. And the basement membrane should always be nice and smooth and continuous, no jagged edges. You shouldn't see things bulging out. That's how your eye should catch the basement membrane. And then count the number of cells from the basement membrane to the apical surface right here. And then you would know how many layers that epithelium is made up of. And this is just one lit cell. And here you can see the nucleus. So this is not stratified, but a simple epithelium. And this cell is about as wide as it is tall. So that's a cuboidal cell. So here's a really nice, simple cuboidal epithelium. Right? Very nicely defined. And then we have connective tissue underneath the epithelium. Okay. And this is a typical kind of picture that you might see in your first lab practicum. These you also have in your exam study guide for lecture exam number one. And I think they're in black and white. But you might be able to trick Microsoft into displaying it as a color picture if you want on your monitor, but I wouldn't really print it out as color because it would be way too expensive probably to do that. All right, so you can practice identifying this particular tissue, and then be sure you can label all of these lead lines as well. Okay, so know that this is a simple cuboidal epithelium. All right, and then here's the nice basement membrane, and then we have connective tissue underneath it. And, of course, don't forget when you cut a tube, let's pretend that this pencil right here or marker is a tube, there's different ways you can cut the tube, right? If it's a transverse section like this, and you look at it edge on, it's going to be what kind of shape? A square or triangle or what? You're right, you said circle. It's going to be a nice circle like what we see right here. But if we cut the tube in a longitudinal section, then we're going to see an upper layer and a lower layer, not a circle, but what? Two lines of cells, which is kind of what we see in this diagram right here. And you can see it kind of curving around, and then it goes down in or out of the plane. Here it's longitudinal within the plane, and then it's going to curve out again. So depending on the orientation, these tubes will look a little bit different. But nonetheless, I see what? Nice basement membrane right here. The lumen is distinguishable, and I see one nice cuboidal cell. So that's a simple cuboidal epithelium. Okay, here we see basement membrane. Here's the apical surface, basal surface. Here's that free space. This is a lumen of some kind of tube. A good example would be digestive system. And what's the shape of these cells right here? Does that look like a cube? Sure does not. It looks like a column. So this is a columnar epithelium. And it's just one cell from basement membrane to apical surface, so that's a simple columnar epithelium. And what do we call this space right here? What's the scientific name for the inner space of a tube? That's the lumen of a tube. It's not labeled on this particular micrograph, but others it will be. Okay, and then connective tissue underneath the basement membrane. So here we see the basement membrane with connective tissue underneath it. And this slide is pretty cool because I see some other cell organelles like cilia right here on the apical surface. And if I look, depending on where I look in the region, it looks like maybe there's two layers, sometimes three layers, sometimes one layer of cells. So it's not really easily definable, so we call this pseudostratified, depending on where you look. But nonetheless, what's the shape of the apical layer right here of these cells? It's columnar, so that's how we define this epithelium, pseudostratified columnar. We also like to include in the name, although your book doesn't, since this is an isolated epithelium, we like to include that in the name under most circumstances. So we would call that a pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. Sometimes people just abbreviate it PSCC for that. Okay. So every once in a while in lab, we see these cilia very nicely as well. And this is a typical kind of epithelium that we see in a trachea. A trachea is your windpipe, so air is passing through the trachea all the time, and we're breathing in dust particles. And so this system right here, along with the goblet cell, perform a little filtering function. So dust particles and bacteria, viruses can get trapped in the mucus that's being secreted by this goblet cell. So that is a gland. It's just a unicellular gland, a single cell. But that's okay, because what kind of tissue makes up glands? What kind of tissue makes up glands? Epithelium, right? And what are we looking at? Epithelium, and voila, here we have a gland right here, even if it's just a simple cell. Secretes mucus onto the apical surface, and these cilia are sweeping all the time. And we figured this out in lab. Which way are they sweeping? Are they sweeping down into the lungs or up out of the lungs into your oral cavity? It's sweeping up. It's actually sweeping up, and that's protecting your lungs from getting filled up with debris and bacteria. So it's a cleaning mechanism. And then when all that debris is in your mouth, then what do? With all that mucus filled with debris? Well, you just swallow it down, okay? That's the easiest way of getting rid of it. But if you're a baseball player, what do? Then you spit it out, okay? But typically we don't walk around spitting. And in class, even if you're a baseball player, we don't spit, please, okay? All right, so pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. Next slide. We looked at these cells in lab. You looked at some cells from this layer right here, right? We sampled some cheek cells or buccal cells, and these slough off. You can kind of see them breaking away up over here. Here's the basement membrane. So what is this, simple or stratified? Clearly, it's not one layer, so it's a stratified, and we name it by the shape of the cells in the apical region right here. These are squamous, so that's a stratified squamous epithelium. And it's kind of like a modified skin, but it's lining your oral cavity. And you can see these cells here look really nice and healthy, big nucleus. These are alive, and as they migrate up to the apical region right here, they move farther and farther away from blood vessels and connective tissue, and they die when they do that, right? They give up the ghost, and if you look at them without a stain, they kind of look ghostly as well, right? Okay. These cells, you might find some in different stages of mitosis down in this basal region right here. So make sure you can recognize the slide and place labels on all these lead lines. Here is a nice tube that's more or less cut in a transverse section. It's a little oval, so a little bit of a oblique section. Okay, and so here's the basement membrane, connective tissue underneath. Here's the nice lumen of the tube. And let's zoom in really close. From basement membrane to apical surface, how many cell layers do you see? Is it just one? Okay, more than one. I see two nuclei, and these cells only contain one nucleus per cell. So this is a stratified cuboidal epithelium. Pretty easy to see. This is a stratified columnar. I see columnar cells, more than one cell layer thick. Here's the basement membrane, connective tissue underneath it. For instance, like lining the urethra, for instance, we would find this kind of epithelium. Okay, for the practicum, you don't have to tell me much about the epithelium other than its classification. Okay, not really where it's found. That's not too important for the practicum. Here is an atypical kind of epithelium. It's still epithelium because this is epithelium because here I see a free space with nothing in it. Right, the cells are packed close together. There's no extracellular material. Now, here's the basement membrane, connective tissue underneath it. But the shape of these cells right here, it's hard to tell if these are squamous or cuboidal. They kind of look like pillows to me. All right, and indeed, they really are kind of like pillows. But much more interesting, these are shapeshifters. These can be short. When they're short, they're relatively thick. Or they can stretch out. They can stretch from right to left. If this cell stretches from right to left, then it becomes very thin when it stretches out. All right? And then when it's not stretched out, it gets really thick again. And that's what these cells are doing all day long. They're stretching out, getting very thin, and when they're allowed to go back to their original length, they get real thick. So we say it's a transitional epithelium, and the organ that does that all day long is the urinary bladder, right? Because it fills up with urine, the urinary bladder stretches out, and then after you void, the urinary bladder shrinks back down, so these cells have to change shape. And we only have a picture right here. This would be a picture of when the bladder is voided, because these cells don't look very long and they look pretty thick in this apical region. So that's kind of an atypical epithelium. None of them have blood vessels. The two atypical kinds of epithelium might be a little bit hard to recognize. Is this transitional? And then the pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium, right? Because depending on where you look, it could be simple or stratified. But it has those nice goblet cells in there and cilia, so it's pretty easy to identify. Okay. So those are the layers. Let's look at some. Here's a gland, a unicellular gland. That's what we call a goblet cell. Here's the secretory pathway. Proteins are made by the rough endoplasmic reticulum, which then moves, those proteins move by vesicles to the Golgi apparatus, where they are modified, right? That protein has a sugar molecule added to it. We say it's conjugated, they're joined together. It becomes mucus. Mucus is that slippery stuff, right? And then it's packaged in a secretory vesicle, moves up to the apical surface, and then it's secreted by the cell. So you should be aware of that typical kind of secretory pathway. Okay, here are some glands that you have to know, but you can see the basement membrane on each of these illustrations right here. And these cells kind of look cuboidal. Some of these cells look columnar. Depending on where you look in the gland and other parts of the gland, they kind of look cuboidal. And there are a lot of, let me zoom into this region right here. There are a lot of glands where, depending on where you look, all right, it's going to be a simple epithelium, but one part might look columnar, another part might look cuboidal, depending on exactly where in the gland you're looking. So there are a lot of glands that have this structure. The other thing that you notice on this diagram is that some glands have a much more rectilinear shape, a straight shape, looks like a tube. So this is what we call a simple tubular gland. Others might look like there's a little berry or a grape or something down here, much more of a circular pattern, right? We call that an alveolar or acinar, acinar or alveolar gland, okay, depending on whether it's a straight tube or if it has this little spherical structure. And then it can be a simple branch tubular, a simple branched alveolar type gland. All right, and then there can be compound. So here is what has many branches, but nonetheless, this is a compound tubular gland. All right, and then here's a compound alveolar gland. And then, what I mentioned before, depending on where you look, sometimes it might have a little bit of an alveolar shape, and other parts of the gland might be tubular in nature, and so then we call that a compound tubulo-alveolar gland. Remember, in anatomy, we can always put two words together as long as we do what between the two words that we're joining together? We put an O between them, right? And always make sure you pronounce it very clearly so people can tell that you're putting two words together. Like, just don't say tubular-alveolar, right? Make sure you say tubulo-alveolar, so they know you're putting tubular and alveolar together. Okay. All right, so those things you have to know, which then takes us to some connective tissue. Oh, there's some nice things about cilia. You're probably responsible for reading those things in the chapter. Okay, but I'm going to move on to, I'm almost going to move on to connective tissue. Not quite yet. I do want to give you an introduction to glands. All right. Besides the anatomical structure, whether it's alveolar or tubular, you can break all glands down into two basic kinds, right? Exocrine glands versus endocrine glands. The pictures that I showed you, I don't want to go back. Close your eyes. Let me go back a number of slides right here without getting seasick. Right here. These right here, these glands, and these cells are the secretory cells. It kind of looks red to me. are secreting a product, okay, into the lumen, and there's a tube that takes it to the surface, and then that product is going to have some activity in the space where the cursor is. Okay. So this kind of gland that secretes its product into the tube, okay, is what we call an exocrine gland. All right, so here is these are all exocrine glands. And I don't have a picture of the other kind of gland, which is an endocrine gland. An endocrine gland, okay, might form a little alveolus, but there's no tube taking that product to some part of the body, but around that alveolus will be some capillaries. So when these cells secrete the product near those capillaries, the capillaries pick up that substance and carry it throughout the whole body. That's what we call an endocrine gland. So a exocrine gland is a duct. An endocrine gland is ductless because it's using the cardiovascular system to distribute the product. And an endocrine gland, okay, secretes something that we call a hormone. So hormones come from endocrine glands, not exocrine glands. So those are two important distinctions that you should know about.
I have a question.
Yes. It has this spherical structure to it. Acinar and alveolar sometimes are used interchangeably. Okay? Okay. But if it's just straight like this, then that's just going to be a tubular gland, right? As opposed to an acinar or alveolar gland. Okay. Yeah, in anatomy sometimes for the same structure, we can come up with what? More than one term. Yeah. So on a practicum or whatever, if I'm not familiar with the term, show me your reference. I'll be happy to give you credit for a right answer that I'm not familiar with. Okay? On lecture exams, that's not such a big point because they're multiple choice, matching, right? You have word banks to choose from. Okay, connective tissue, different than epithelium. All right, close your eyes again. Let me flip through these slides right here. Here is a typical kind of epithelium. One more slide. Here's a typical kind of connective tissue. And we see a number of cells in this connective tissue. I see one right here. Oh, what's the name of this guy right here? That's a fibroblast. And the job of a fibroblast is to make and secrete fibers. That's the job of a fibroblast. Here's a macrophage. All right, this is a red blood cell that escaped from the cardiovascular system, and it's a shapeshifter. It can crawl around every place. And it has an easy job crawling around in connective tissue because what can you tell me about the relationship of this fibroblast and this adipocyte over here? Are they touching each other? Are they close together or far apart? They're far apart. So that's a good characteristic of connective tissue. So this macrophage can crawl around in connective tissue pretty easily because it's not cells right up against each other. There's big separations between cells. As a matter of fact, what gives connective tissue its particular qualities and properties are not necessarily the cells that make it up, but the stuff that's between the cells, that extracellular material, and it's so special in a connective tissue that we call it the matrix. Extracellular material is the matrix, and it can be filled with fibers. I see big, thick fibers here that are made from collagen, so you got to know the names of some chemicals in these different kinds of tissues. Collagen is like a steel cable or a Kevlar cable. If you pull it from end to end, it won't stretch. With extreme force, like a severe automobile accident, of course you can rip it, okay, but it's very, very difficult. But if you pull on it from side to side, it's very easy to separate, right? Just like if you have thread at home, you can separate it from side to side, but if you pull on it from end to end, it's pretty sturdy. The same thing with collagen. All right, so it's used to hold material together and to make things that should be really strong, at least in one dimension, like tendons, when a tendon connects a muscle to a bone. Hence, we call that connective tissue. Another kind of fiber that a fibroblast makes is one that when you pull on it from end to end, it can stretch a little bit without damaging, and then when a tension is released, what does it do? It goes back to its original length, right? So that's elastin, or it makes elastic fibers. Can't withstand tension as much as collagen right here, but for a little bit, it's really good, and the other thing is that it will return that structure back to its original shape. The weakest fiber, you should know then how to order these three different fibers in terms of their strength. Right? The weakest one is reticular fiber. All right, so in order of strength, you have collagen, elastic, and reticular. And then, of course, elastic, remember, it can spring back to its original length if it's not damaged. But these reticular fibers are very weak, and it holds organs together that typically don't have a lot of tension applied to them, for instance, like the spleen. But a spleen can be damaged by blunt trauma to it, and when that happens, the spleen has a tendency to rip apart because it only has reticular fibers. And the skin, for instance, does have a lot of collagen in it, so if you do lacerate your skin, it's easy to repair it. You can just sew it back up. You can place a suture in skin because it's filled with collagen, and that's a strong fiber. It will hold a suture, but if you're dealing with a spleen that only has reticular fibers, as soon as you place a suture, that will rip more of these reticular fibers, and you actually cause more bleeding, more damage. So you can't really suture a spleen back together because the nature of the connective tissue in the matrix, right? How would you help somebody that has a ruptured spleen and you can't put sutures in it to sew it back up? Well, it has to be ablated, right? It has to be removed. Otherwise, that person's going to bleed to death. You have to tie off a blood vessel leading to it and then remove that part of the spleen, hopefully, or if the whole spleen is damaged, the whole spleen has to be removed. Okay, so you have cells in connective tissue and the matrix. You have fibers in the matrix, but you also have other space. And we call this ground substance. Ground substance is made of sugar proteins, and it's soluble material. Its job is to hold fluid into the matrix, and it just is a nice homogeneous background. You don't see any fibers ever in it. So that's what we call ground substance. So matrix is made of ground substance and fibers, and they come from fibroblasts. Okay. So that's a pretty good orientation for connective tissue. Let's look at some connective tissues. This first one right here, let's see if I follow my, pretty well, okay. This is what we call loose areolar connective tissue, or you could call it areolar connective tissue. I see some big, thick fibers. What would you call that from the previous slide? Collagen, that's the big, strong one. I see some collagen moving from right to left. I see some collagen moving from top to bottom. There's some collagen that are moving in and out of the plane. So loose areolar connective tissue can withstand force in all three dimensions, but not a lot of force in any particular one because it's not loaded with collagen, it just has some collagen, right? It has a lot of ground substance. It has some elastic fiber, so loose areolar connective tissue, when it stretches and you let go, what can it do? Goes back, right, as long as you don't overstretch it. And here are the cells that secrete these fibers into the matrix as well as the ground substance. These are fibroblasts. Okay, so on the practicum, make sure you read the question. So if there is a number right here, like number one, the first question on the practicum, on the question it's going to say name the cell. Okay, so what would you put down to label this lead line right here if it were to say name the cell? Yes, don't put nucleus down, because a nucleus is an organelle, not a name of a cell, right? So always read the question on a practicum. When you get to bone, some of the questions will say, well, name the bone, and you can say the name of the bone. Other questions might say, what's this part of the bone? Name this hole in the bone. So if it's asking for the hole, or what we say in anatomy, foramen, don't tell me the name of the bone. Tell me specifically what the question is asking for. So on a practicum, always read the question first, right? That's a good thing to do. When I look at areolar connective tissue, it stands out in my mind very easily because it looks like a stained glass window to me. I see all kinds of fractured patterns put together. Sometimes you might see some blues and greens and yellows if there's adipocytes in there or fat cells, right? So some of them can be very pretty to look at. Okay, here's kind of an atypical connective tissue. All right, so let's review the characteristics of a connective tissue. What's the important thing about a connective tissue? Is it the cells that are close together, or is it the matrix, the stuff that's between the cells that's important? It's the matrix. So let's go back to this areolar connective tissue. So it's all of these fibers and ground substance that give areolar connective tissue its particular function, right? Because it has the right kind of fibers. Now if we look at adipose connective tissue, here is a cell. So I'm outlining the plasma membrane of this cell. Here I can see a nucleus with a little bit of cytoplasm, but what makes up most of the cell is this oil droplet right here, fat droplet. And that's an important energy source for us, and it's also used to make certain parts of the cell, like the plasma membrane and maybe hormones and things like that. So we have to have plenty of this material in our bodies, not only just for energy source. But here is the cell. Here is the neighboring cell. Notice it's touching the first one. And then here are some other neighboring cells right here and right here. They're touching all together. Right? So what did I tell you about a connective tissue? The cell should be what? Far apart. Here's a connective tissue where the cells are all put together. They're touching each other. And the important thing is intracellular, this vacuole inside the cell. That's why it's atypical. The matrix is not so important, but it's the intracellular vacuole that gives this particular tissue its characteristic. And when you look underneath the microscope, it's not very interesting because what do you see mostly? Just a big hollow space, but you should know that there is lipid in there. And this thing right here, I don't know what that is. That looks like a worm crawling around in there. I don't know what that is. Looks like a tapeworm. Okay. Here is reticular connective tissue, like we find in the spleen. This is a pretty high magnification, 555 power. Typically, that's a lot more than what we have in a lab. And reticular fibers are thin, highly branched, and they stain very dark. All right, so that's how you would recognize this as a reticular connective tissue and not an epithelium because you still see a lot of spaces between these cells. Okay, here I see collagen. Doesn't stain nearly as dark. This is what we call dense irregular connective tissue. Makes up things like joint capsules. This is a pretty tough connective tissue, but here I see the longitudinal direction of a collagen fiber going from right to left. Here is a bundle that looks like it's coming in and out of the plane, so it has a different orientation. Here's one that kind of looks a little bit more oblique, right, at kind of an angle. So dense irregular connective tissue is loaded with collagen, so it's strong. It can resist stretching in all dimensions, but it's still not as strong as this next one, which is dense regular connective tissue. Collagen and all of these collagens are oriented in the same direction. It can withstand a tremendous amount of force from right to left, but not at all from top to bottom or in and out of the plane. It can separate very easily if we were to pull on this material from top to bottom. So if you ever use a joint inappropriately, like you twist an ankle and you don't stretch a tendon in the way it's built and designed, if you pull it from side to side, guess what will happen to it? It will rip pretty easily. Okay, so the other thing that you notice about the joint capsule, which is the previous slide, and the one that we're looking at right here, I don't see any blood vessels in here anywhere. Tendons and ligaments are made up of dense regular connective tissue, repair themselves very poorly, if at all, because they can't regenerate. Even though there's living tissue, there's living cells, they're very far removed from nutrients and oxygen supply. So once a tendon is stretched out, then it's going to stay that way unless you surgically shorten it and reattach it. Okay, so dense regular connective tissue. Dense regular is by far the strongest, at least in one dimension. Okay, here are some elastic fibers. This is not a very high magnification. It's hard to appreciate what's going on right here, but these fibers can be branched. We find elastic tissue in major large arteries like the aorta. So when the heart pumps a big bolus of blood into the aorta can actually expand a little bit like a balloon to accept all of that blood. And then as the blood flows to your periphery, right, then the aorta actually shrinks back down. So some arteries have a lot of elastic fibers, like the conducting arteries close to the heart. Other arteries don't have much, like the distributing arteries out farther in the body. Okay, here is a good micrograph that shows a different kind of connective tissue. Now, how would you know this is connective tissue when you just look at this, as opposed to epithelium? I see matrix. I see the cells are far apart. That's a good clue. Okay, I don't see a free edge anywhere. All right, so here is a cell, and just because of the random arrangement of these cells right here, it kind of looks like a little bit of a speckle pattern to me. All right, I know it's cartilage. This is a really high magnification, 720. I'd like to have one maybe about 500, and you'd really see it, just a nice speckle pattern. Okay, and that tells me it's cartilage. So here is a cartilage cell. There's the nucleus, and it's in a little bubble. And here's the matrix. This little bubble is what we call a lacunae. And this cell is a chondrocyte. Anytime You think of cartilage, you should say chondro, right? Chondro means cartilage. What does site mean? Cell. So it's a cartilage cell. Okay, so chondro means cartilage. These chondrocytes are in lacunae. This matrix right here has ground substance, but I don't see any fibers. It does have some collagen, but the form of the collagen is very thin and soluble. It has soluble collagen, as well as other sugar proteins in here. So this kind of collagen, this kind of cartilage, all right, is not quite as strong as bone. It does have a certain shape to it. It can maintain a shape, but the nice advantage over bone is that it's very light. So metabolically, you don't need a lot of muscle to move it around, to hold it up, right? That's a big advantage. The other advantage is that it can deform, it can bend a little bit, right, to some degree or another, right? So this is what we call hyaline cartilage. It also covers the tips of bones that are touching each other. And bones that touch each other that form a joint should move appropriately, and the ends of the bone shouldn't really touch each other because they would grind each other away. But if it's cartilage on top of cartilage, they'll slide over each other very nicely. All right, so hyaline cartilage is nice and slippery, but it is not very strong because it doesn't have a lot of fibers. There are other kinds of cartilages that have fibers. Ah, thanks, here's the sign-in sheet. Really good, really good. We did good today, not like Wednesday. We were bad Wednesday. We didn't pass this around. Okay, I'll leave it here for right now. Okay, here I see some. I see chondrocytes. I see lacunae. But now in the matrix, right, I see more than just ground substance. I see fibers. And what about these fibers? Are they collinear? Are they straight? Or do they form a lot of branches? Branches. And if you go back to that initial slide, you should notice that collagen usually is nice and linear and straight. Elastic fibers are branched. All right, so these are elastic fibers right here. So this is what we call elastic cartilage. And now I'll throw a nice curveball at you. What kind of tissue is elastic cartilage? Yes, that's where we find it. But when I say what kind of tissue, there's four kinds of tissues. Of the four kinds of tissues, what is it? It's connective tissue. Yeah. So on a practicum, always tell me cartilage or hyaline cartilage or elastic cartilage. You can put CT down for connective tissue. Don't say hyaline cartilage epithelium or hyaline cartilage muscle, right? Something like that. Don't mix your groups together. So just say CT if it's a connective tissue. Okay. And of course, your ear, you know, is nice and bendable. And then when you let go, it goes back to its original location, as long as you don't overdo it, as long as you don't smash that ear or really stretch it, because then you damage these elastic fibers, and when it gets rebuilt, it's not always the same structure, right? So somebody that has a damaged ear, the ear is deformed even as it heals. And what do you call an ear that sometimes a boxer will get if he gets slammed in the ear all the time? A cauliflower ear. We should Google that and show that to you. Okay. We can do that if we have time afterwards. All right, so that's the second kind of cartilage. There's a third kind of cartilage that's even stronger, can resist even more tension or compression, and that's fibrocartilage. Here I see chondrocytes in lacunae, and now I see a lot of fibers in the matrix. These are collagen fibers, and they're all oriented in nice parallel sheets. This kind of cartilage forms intervertebral discs, and these have to withstand a lot of compression because the vertebral column is what? Supporting your body weight. So there's a tremendous amount of pressure, especially in the lower regions. Anybody know what the lower regions of your spinal cord are called? Not the lowest, but the next lowest is the lumbar region. So the lumbar region is holding up most of your body right here. Okay, so that's fibrocartilage. Here is a pretty easy slide to recognize, because I see circles all over the place. So, what did we say about circles? When you see circles, what are you really kind of looking at? You're looking at a tube that has been cut in a nice transverse section, and then you're looking at that tube on end, right? So bone is made out of tubes. But what kind of tubes? Well, here is an inner tube, and then here is an outer one, and then there's even one on the outside of that, and then there's even one even more superficial to that, and there's one that's even more superficial to that. And so there's tubes inside tubes inside tubes, and then it's next to tubes inside tubes, and then there's even tubes that surround all of these tubes. All right, so What's the specialization for having all these tubes? Well, if I have this pencil right here, it would be easy for me to snap it if I were to just bend it from end to end, like that. But if I tried to break it just by compressing it from end to end, it would be almost impossible, right? If we could probably place almost everybody in the class on top of this pencil and it wouldn't break, right, if we put it from tip to tip. But if we put it on the edge of the table, just by me stepping on it, it would snap, right? So bones don't compress because that's the orientation of all those tubes inside there. The names of these tubes are what we call lamellae, okay? And in between the lamellae, we have lacunae with cells, living cells. So bone is a very living kind of tissue. Those cells are not chondrocytes, because where you find chondrocytes? In cartilage, and this ain't cartilage, this is bone. These kinds of cells are what we call osteocytes. Anytime you hear that word osteo, you think of bone. Anytime you hear chondro, you think of cartilage. So here are lacunae. We don't have the magnification to actually see the cells in there, but there are osteocytes inside these lacunae. Bone also has collagen fibers, which we sort of can't see. In lab, we'll be able to look at them. And in the very center of these lamellae are blood vessels. So there's an artery and a vein. There's even nerves in bone. And so each one of these has its own blood supply. Bone is highly vascular, which is good and bad. The bad part is when a bone is fractured, what happens? Well, it ruptures all these blood vessels and there's hemorrhage. And if it's a big bone, that hemorrhage could be massive and it could be fatal. All right, but what's the upside? What's the good thing about having bone being vascular as opposed to these cement pillars that are holding up the building? The good thing is that when a bone is broken, it has nutrients, it has oxygen, it can repair itself very quickly, within about 4 weeks, 5 weeks, as long as you take care of the bone, right? Unlike tendons and ligament and cartilage, which just won't heal. Okay, so when you look at something that looks like it has tree rings, it looks like a botany class, but that's really inside your body, you're going to say, what kind of tissue is that? You could say bone CT, bone connective tissue. You could say osseous tissue. Okay, that's okay. Osseous means bone. Ossification is when something forms a bone from cartilage. But I would probably say bone CT. Right? Don't say bone epithelium. All right, so that's easy to recognize. Okay, here's another kind of connective tissue. This kind of connective tissue can connect your lungs to your brain. It can connect your heart to all the muscles of your body. And it does it because this kind of tissue can flow. It has fluid. All right, so this is blood, CT. The fluid part of blood right here is what we call plasma. It's labeled. Here we go. It's labeled on the slide. You're responsible for that. But it also has cells. These cells have different functions that we're going to look at. These right here, these cells that don't have a nucleus, they're curiously devoid of a nucleus. These are red blood cells. They don't have organelles. They're loaded with a chemical compound we call hemoglobin. And hemoglobin carries the oxygen in our bodies. I think we talked about why oxygen is important. What organelle needs oxygen? Did we talk about organelles yet in here? Yeah, I think so. Yeah, mitochondria, right? And your brain will run out of ATP within how many seconds? 3 seconds, unless these red blood cells are delivering oxygen to your brain, right? So that's the job of these red blood cells. Loaded with hemoglobin, don't have room for anything else, but that also means that they can't repair themselves if they get damaged, right? And they get old really fast. They only live for about 120 days. We talked about that too, I think. Okay, red blood cells. These right here, even though they don't look white, these are leukocytes. And guess what leuko means? White, right? Leuko is white, and otherwise you'd call these a white blood cell. There's 5 different kinds of leukocytes. We see 2 kinds right here, easily distinguished because a lymphocyte has a huge, large spherical nucleus which almost takes up the whole interior of the cell. Here is a lymphocyte that has many lobes to the nucleus, and there is extensive cytoplasm in the cell. So you do have to know neutrophil from lymphocyte. And the other 3 kinds, we probably don't talk much in this class about because some might look pink, others might look a little purple, some might look a little blue. And, you know, I don't know how to show you those different kinds of cells in lab. Or I could say, what is this right here? And you would say, well, that's an eosinophil because it has a certain color. And I couldn't tell if you're kidding me or not, right, because I can't see those colors. So you can read up on those different kinds of red, white blood cells, but nonetheless, they all perform an immune function. They help protect your body from infection, all of these different white blood cells. Okay, this little guy right here, that belongs there. It's not labeled. It's a cell fragment that prevents blood loss when a blood vessel is damaged. That's what we call a platelet. Right? And so we got red blood cells, white blood cells, platelets. They have the corresponding more scientific name. This would be a leukocyte. Red is erythro. So here is an erythrocyte. This platelet's real name is a thrombocyte. So you got leukocytes, erythrocytes, and thrombocytes. And the practicum, what do you got to know? Lymphocyte, neutrophil, red blood cell, plasma. And know it's what? A connective tissue and blood. This is very easy to see. Okay, so that's really good for connective tissues. Wow, we talked about all that stuff already. Okay. The next pictures right here are of membranes. There are various kinds of membranes. I think we included that in the previous lecture a little bit, at least in your lecture notes. I like the cutaneous membrane, right, that surrounds your body. There's membranes that make joint capsules. Sometimes we call that the cutaneous membrane. Most membranes can be broken down into one of two kinds. Okay? Let's see if I can get close to the board without the microphone going crazy. Okay, the cutaneous membrane is not either of these two basic kinds, but I want to go over these two basic kinds. One is what we call a mucous membrane, M-U-C-O-U-S, mucus. Notice that this is O-U-S. When mucus is used as an adjective, you put an extra O in there. If it's used as a noun, like mucus, the stuff that's coming out of your nose when you have a cold, that's M-U-C-U-S. Right, but if it's a mucous membrane as an adjective, right, put the O in there, mucous membrane. Mucous membrane, and the other kind of membrane is a serous. Serous membrane. Let's see if we can review these. A serous membrane has three divisions to it. A mucous membrane just has one division. A mucous membrane lines a cavity that is open to the outside world, like the nasal cavity, oral cavity. The digestive tract is a mucous membrane. Some mucous membranes secrete mucus, but not all mucous membranes have to. There are some that don't secrete mucus, but if it's a mucous membrane that's secreting mucus, what kind of gland does it have to have? It has to have it's a unicellular gland. A goblet cell. Yeah, it has to have a goblet cell that secretes mucus, okay? Which it means it's going to be some kind of columnar epithelium, but that's okay because an epithelium does what? It lines a surface or a cavity, right? So we would expect to see an epithelium there. A serous membrane, on the other hand, lines a cavity that's not open to the outside world, like the inside of the lungs. I'm sorry, the outside surface of the lungs. So let's look. Right here. Here are the lungs, and I see two membranes right here. This is the serous membrane. The membrane that's right on the surface of the lung, we call that the visceral. I'll try to get the spelling right, because that's important in class. Why is spelling important in here? I hate it, but it's important. Why is it important? Because it's school. I told you guys that already. Okay, visceral membrane is right on the surface of the visceral organ, right? Right on the surface of the lungs. And then the last part is this membrane right here that's up against the body wall, the body cavity, up against maybe some skin or muscle or bone. That's the parietal division, parietal serous membrane versus visceral serous membrane. And what do you see? You see some space between those two membranes. And that's the serous cavity filled with serous fluid. All right? Cavity with fluid. Serous fluid. Right there. So a serous membrane is a little bit more complicated. So you have the pleural serous membrane around the lungs, and you have the peritoneal serous membrane surrounding what? That's a review. The peritoneal around the abdominal and pelvic cavities, that's the peritoneal membrane, or you could say, and then what else? Then we had the pericardial. That's easy to know. Where's the pericardial serous membrane at? That's around the heart. And it still has all those three divisions, right? Okay, and so you have some slides that talk about those various membranes. Okay, that takes us to some muscle tissue that we have right here. Okay, I'm not going to finish this chapter, but I do want to tell you some things about muscle before we go to a little programmed activity, a little flash quiz, but it won't count for course points, but it will help you identify some of these structures. Okay, so here we have muscle. And in particular, we call it skeletal muscle because it's attached to bones. And if you put all the bones together in your body, what do you end up with? Put all your bones together. Nothing else, just your bones. You have your skeleton, right? So since this kind of muscle is attached to bones or your skeleton, we call it skeletal muscle. That's just the way it goes, okay? Pretty easy to know. And when you look at this slide right here, this micrograph, what kind of stands out immediately? What do you see? Might even make you dizzy. You see all these stripes. The stripes, we say, are striations. And these striations line up from one cell to the next and even cells on top of or below them. And so they're very prominent, very easy to see. These skeletal muscle cells are long and linear. They don't have any branching pattern. But they do have many nuclei for every muscle cell, and that's because when these muscle cells originate, they were maybe 100 different cells at one time that fused together to make this big, long, tubular cell that we call a fiber. And then all those hundreds of nuclei don't disappear. They stay within that one cell. So today, a mature muscle cell is multinuclear, and it's long and linear, and it's made up of these striations. And the striations are there because of the internal structures that allows for this cell to contract. And that's the specialization of muscle tissue. It's designed to contract. So when a skeletal muscle contracts, what moves? Not just the muscle, but your skeletons. Yeah, your bones move, right? So that moves your body around. And what kind of control is that? Can you control your body from sitting down and standing up or reaching for a glass of water? Yeah. It's under voluntary control. So skeletal muscle is under voluntary control. You can get it to relax or contract at a particular time. And you have nice control. You can contract muscles in your right arm while relaxing in your left or vice versa. Okay. So you have really nice control over skeletal muscle. If you go to the next kind of muscle, this is cardiac muscle. These muscles are short. So here's the end of one cell right here, and it goes just to right here. So it's short. And you can see that it's branched as well. It's not long and linear, but it has one similar feature. What do you see? You see striations. So the internal machinery that makes that muscle shorten is the same compared to skeletal muscle, but the difference here is that it's under involuntary control. You can't control your heart like you can a biceps or some kind of skeletal muscle. You can't cause your heart to stop beating, and I can't imagine why you would want to, right? Because that's important for pumping blood. But you can influence, I suppose, if you're a yogi master, you can slow your heart way down, maybe to where some people, if they're in a hurry, can't actually tell your heart is beating, okay? Or, for instance, maybe you could speed your heart up. You can influence your heart rate, but you don't have really good control of it. Like, what could I do right now to speed your heart up? I could say, okay, here, I'm going to give you your first test right now. Put all your books away. Okay, so probably your respiratory rate increased, okay, your heart rate increased, your pupils dilated, okay, a number of things happened, probably started sweating a little bit, but those are all things that happen automatically. You can't cause your sweat glands to sweat or your heart to contract in a different rhythm. So we say cardiac muscle is involuntary, which is different than skeletal muscle, and because it's real short, okay, when the heart contracts, we don't want the cell on the left to pull away from the cell on the right over here, they've got to be stuck together. That right there is a special junction between cardiac muscle cells so that they don't rip apart. That's called an intercalated disc. There are cell junctions in there that hold the cell together, and there are also certain passageways called gap junctions that allow electrical information to hop from one cell to the next, so that when this cell is told to contract, it passes that signal on to the next cell, to the next one, and even down, because it's branched down to what, deeper and deeper layers of the heart. So when one cell is told to contract, what happens to the whole heart? The whole heart is told to contract because of these intercalated discs right here. And that works perfectly for your heart, because you don't want one part of your heart to contract while the other is relaxed, because then it won't pump blood, right? The whole heart has to do what? It has to contract in unison to pump blood. And that's exactly what you don't want to have happen in skeletal muscle, right? Because if I reach out for my Diet Pepsi right there, if I tell my triceps to contract, right, if they're all connected together, what would happen to all the skeletal muscles in my body? They would contract, right? And then that would be a mess, right? Nothing would happen. So the subcellular structures are very important for how these different muscles work. And then you can see the nice branching pattern. The third kind of muscle is smooth muscle. You should not see striations. I almost see striations, but that's just because of the dot pattern that was used to print the picture. I hope you don't see it on the slides that you can see right here. Oh, I forgot to turn the lights down. Too late now, because the lecture is almost over. I'm glad the lights are on, but remind me next time to turn the front lights down, because you'll be able to see the slides better next time. But let's look at an illustration right here. This reminds me of something that's going to happen Sunday. This Sunday coming up. Super Bowl. What do they use when they play Super Bowl? A football. And a football, right, is kind of like an oval that's a little prolate. It has pointy ends to it. So take a football and stretch it out a little bit more. You end up with something that looks like a smooth muscle cell. One nucleus per cell, and do you see striations in there? No, you know, I even see striations over here, so that just kind of superimposes on the cells, right? It doesn't belong inside these cells. So the internal machinery for how a smooth muscle contracts is different than cardiac muscle and skeletal muscle. We'll see how that is a little bit later on in the class. These kinds of cells are under autonomic control or automatic control. You can't control when they contract and when they relax. They make up the walls of hollow organs inside your body, like digestive tract, urinary tract, reproductive tract, respiratory tract, your iris in your eye, okay, which causes changes in your pupil diameter, are made from smooth muscles, and that gets taken care of with the autonomic nervous system. All right, so this is a micrograph. Maybe you can get an impression of these cells and only one nucleus involuntary control of these muscles right there. Okay, so we're almost done except for one slide. Nervous tissue. All right, these cells, all right, two general kinds of cells that make up nervous tissue. Some that have a really strange shape. Here is the major part of the cell, and then there's a projection that comes off, usually one end. Here's one coming off this other cell right over here. That's what we call an axon. And even though this is a microscopic cell, it might only be, you know, a couple tens of microns in diameter, something way too small with your naked eye, this projection can be maybe a meter long. It can be a huge distance. It could travel from your spinal cord all the way down to the tip of your toe. All right, so this kind of cell sends electrical information that distance very rapidly. So it coordinates your body in a very rapid fashion over long distances. So this cell that sends electrical signals is what we call a neuron. Okay, and it's got the cell body. We'll look at these in a lot of detail when we get into the nervous system. So I just want you to know this is a neuron. And here's a nice nucleus inside the neuron. It's a pretty big cell. But I see nuclei in the background right here. These are the second kind of nervous system cell. They don't send electrical information. They just maintain the health of this neuron right here. These are what we call support cells. You don't have to know this for the practicum, but sometimes we call these neuroglial cells or neuroglia cells. These are important because they maintain or allow the function of neurons. Sometimes they help neurons regenerate when they're damaged. They also tell neurons how to connect up to various places in your body. So even though they don't send information, they play very important roles on how your nervous system functions, and without them, your nervous system won't function. All right, you need more than just neurons. So the two kinds of cells are neurons and support cells. Okay, so we have a couple minutes to look at some slides and practice just recognizing different tissues by their shape. Okay, so where do I want to go for that? I want to go up. So we're not quite done. We want to look for something that says something like a flash quiz. Okay. Ooh, I want to do something with this. I want to hide that. I don't want you to see. Ooh, I want to hide that. Okay, look at the slide over here on the right. What do you see? Not much. You see a rest station. There's nothing there. All right, so I want you to identify this slide. So on the practicum, you got to know the phases of mitosis. You got to know different kinds of tissues, right? So let's go over this not very fast. So here is, what is this? Is that a tissue? No, that's mitosis. What phase of mitosis is that? All here, all the chromosomes lined up on the metaphase plate, nice spindle apparatus, right? So that's metaphase, right? So metaphase. And then, oh, what's this? This looks like a tissue. Is that an epithelium? Absolutely not. Cells are far apart. It's a connective tissue. Oh my God, what kind of connective tissue? Hyaline cartilage, no fibers. I see a nice lacunae. What are these cells right here? Those are chondrocytes. Those are chondrocytes. Those of you that have had lab already, especially last week, maybe this is sort of making sense, but those of you that haven't had lab yet, you know, repetition. You just haven't seen it enough to know what it is, but you'll get there. Okay, so this is hyaline cartilage. And then we have a bunch of cells. Okay, this depicts a certain phase of the cell cycle, not necessarily mitosis, but the growth phase. All of these cells are in interphase. Right, so I would say interphase for this particular slide. And then we got a rest station. Oh, more mitosis. I see the chromosomes are separated. What do we call these chromosomes now? These are daughter chromosomes, okay, daughter chromatids, and they're being separated. What phase do they start to separate? During anaphase, so I would say anaphase right here for that one. And what's that? That's bone. Oh, what kind of tissue is bone? Yeah, CT. You can say for the practicum CT for connective tissue over and over again. Then you got to know how these things are labeled. Okay, what do we got here? Simple cuboidal epithelium. And practice those lead lines, little connective tissue underneath right there, basement membrane you see. Ah, what's that? Ah, real easy. Blood, and what kind of tissue is that? That's connective tissue, right? All right, on a practicum you're going to have a minute and a half per station where you have a picture like this. And you answered the question in how long did it take you right now? Those of you who've seen this before? Maybe 1 second. On the practicum, you guys probably will be bored out of your mind. All right? And you can only look at your own station. Please don't look around during the practicum. Even though you're bored out of your mind, you're going to have to stand there for a minute with nothing to do. Okay? No cell phones, no nothing. All right? But you do have to know how to spell red blood cell, white blood cell. Oh, no, what? What is this here? Lymphocyte and neutrophil, all right? Okay, ah, what's this? Basement membrane, cilia, pseudostratified ciliated columnar epithelium. You know that's an epithelium because these cells are all packed close together. It's not a connective tissue. Basement membrane, is it simple or stratified? Definitely stratified. And squamous, stratified squamous epithelium. Notice, no blood vessels in there anywhere. Here is a stratified cuboidal epithelium with a nice lumen of the tube right here. Okay? And funny little epithelium. Pillows right here, that's transitional epithelium. Connective tissue down below that basement membrane. And then it's a CT. It's a connective tissue. Which kind? Fibers all over the place, all different directions. We got elastic, can stretch a little bit. Got some collagen. This is areolar connective tissue. Kind of looks like a stained glass window. Okay? Areolar CT. This is adipose connective tissue. These are adipocytes. Your book says fat cells. That's a little elementary school. You should say what? Adipocyte. This is adipose tissue. Adipose CT. Oh, looks like mitosis again. What phase is that? Prophase. Right? You have condensation of chromosomes right here. And then we have some fibroblasts, a lot of collagen. So it's So it's dense, but what kind of dense connective tissue? Irregular, because these fibers are going all over the place. Dense, irregular, CT. And then these dark, highly branched, really thin fibers, reticular, CT. And more than one layer, so it's some kind of stratified columnar epithelium. Here's that free space. Here's the apical surface, basement membrane, connective tissue down below it. That's what smooth muscle used to look like in the old textbook. And then simple columnar epithelium. And then we've got dense collagen, dense regular. They're all parallel, parallel sheets. Dense regular CT. That's skin. We haven't looked at skin yet. So, we looked at that. You know what that is? Cardiac muscle, intercalated discs, right? And then, you should tell me a couple things about this. What phase of mitosis? And what's happening? It is telophase, you're right, but what's happening? Cytokinesis is happening, right? So cytokinesis is the separation of the cytoplasm into two daughter cells. Mitosis, think of it more as separation of what? The genetic material into two daughter cells. Kind of organize it that way in your mind. Then here we have, I see chondrocytes. Now what kind of cartilage is this? It is the strong one, it is fibrocartilage. Fibrocartilage because these are collagen fibers oriented in one direction. Not a lot of branched elastic fibers. So fibrocartilage and then skeletal muscle. And then here's some skin that you don't have to know just yet. Now here is some cartilage with highly branched fibers. That's the elastic cartilage. And what kind of tissue is cartilage? It's CT. It's a connective tissue as well. Okay. Ooh, what's this? That is mitosis. What phase? I just see the chromosomes all over the place, not arranged yet. That is prophase. As a matter of fact, that's the later parts of prophase. Even the spindle apparatus hasn't even completely formed yet, but the nuclear envelope has disappeared, some characteristics. What's that? Yeah, metaphase. I don't know if we can get through them all, but we can try. Okay, so I'm going to flash through the next picture. Take a look. Tell me what it looks like. What's that? Hyaline cartilage. And this is cells and interphase. Here we've got anaphase, because they're starting to separate. Anaphase. Take a look again. We got, I showed it way too long period of time. Bone CT. What's that? Simple cuboidal, epi, too long. Blood CT, pseudostratified ciliated columnar, epithelium. We got what? Stratified squamous epithelium. Let's go back. Stratified cuboidal, because the magnification is not quite what it should be right there. Okay, here's another one. That was transitional. Areolar CT, don't forget CT, and the transitional is what? Epithelium, that's an epithelium. Then we've got adipose CT, and that was another prophase. I could still see the nuclear envelope, but the chromatin was condensing into chromosomes. And we've got dense irregular CT, reticular CT, stratified columnar epi. Smooth muscle, terrible picture. Oh, what's that? Simple columnar epi, dense regular CT. That's skin you don't have to know just yet. Ooh, that you know. Cardiac muscle, ooh, that you know. Telophase with cytokinesis, ooh, that you should know. Fibrocartilage CT. All right, if that didn't pop right out at you, just a little bit of studying, I'm sure it will. And then we've got skeletal muscle. And then some more skin. And then we've got elastic cartilage. Don't forget that. What kind of tissue is that? CT, that's a connective tissue. And then prophase. What's this one? We'll do this one real fast. Metaphase. Okay, so those of you that have your practicum Wednesday morning, we won't be able to do this again, but I'll do this again in lecture. Okay? Those pictures are in your exam study guide for the lecture test. And most of your lectures are online at drgober.com, except for the first lecture was on a different recorder, and I didn't have it at home with me.